Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
It's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Actually quite sick the day before, and I wasn't even thinking about, and I was out of town too. So I wasn't even thinking about the radio show, and I didn't even dawn on me till the following day, till Thursday, that I forgot to do the show. But anyway, I understand that they played a repeat, but the show is not posted on the internet. So if anybody tries to listen to this program or is listening to the archives and they try to go to last week's show, it does not exist. So it's up. This is the newest show, and then you have to go back 2 weeks in the archives for the live show that I did. I mean, I'm not going to archive a repeat because that show is already in the archive someplace else. Anyway, I apologize for that. The first time that's happened in over a year of doing this program. But anyway, we've got a lot to talk about today. The lines are open, so please call me toll-free. The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Well, first of all, I happened to be on CNBC again this morning on Squawk Box at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And, you know, I tried to send out an email to our database yesterday alerting people in the database to my appearance. I didn't find out about it because they didn't call me until yesterday afternoon to see if I would do the show. But we had a problem, I think, with the mass email programs, and that email never got out. So I wasn't able to alert people in advance to the television program, which I usually like to do. And if I don't have your email addresses for a number of reasons, you should make sure we get it so that I can let you know about upcoming appearances. I do think that I will be back on CNBC again sometime in the next couple of weeks. In fact, I probably would be on next week, but I'm going to be traveling. I think I'm going to be out on the West Coast most of next week. But I know that they wanted me back relatively soon based on the fact that they really didn't have that long a segment. It was 4 or 5 minute segment, which, you know, in television terms is still pretty long. But I think there were a lot of issues left unsaid. And so they, as soon as we were finished with the program, the producer was on the phone with me saying, how soon can you come back? So people will have an opportunity to see me again if they missed me this morning. Also, hopefully within the next day or two, maybe even by tomorrow, that broadcast will be on my website, and you can view it along with previous appearances on CNBC and some recent Bloomberg appearances as well. And again, the email address, for those of you who don't know it, is www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net. And if anybody happened to catch me on that program this morning, certainly if you saw that program and went to my website for the first time and are now listening to this radio show, give me a call. I would be interested in getting some feedback from some people who might have seen it, particularly people who weren't used to seeing me. And again, the number to call toll-free, the lines are open, is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, the big topic for today is going to be the appointment of Ben Bernanke to replace outgoing Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan. And the markets, you know, the stock market anyway, has so far reacted to the Bernanke appointment by rising. It had a pretty substantial gain the other day, and then it's held those gains for the last couple days. And the market seems to be happy with that choice, although the bond market, that's a different story. We've had three consecutive substantial drops in the bond market. Long-term interest rates are now perched at their highest level in over 6 months. We're the highest we've been since early March. I think the yield on a 10-year bond now is now around 4.6 something. I mean, we blew right through the 4.5 barrier. I think technically the next stop is around 4.90, and I think that we're going to get there. Certainly, before the end of the year, the way the market is trading now, we could be there in a week or two. And I think beyond that level, beyond the 4.90 level, I think the next resistance is around 5.5 on the 10-year. And I do believe we have a shot of hitting 5.5% before the end of 2005. And 5.5% would probably put mortgage rates up around maybe 8%. I mean, right now they're probably going to be about six and a quarter right now, based on, I think they were just over 6, maybe 6.10 last week. I think they'll be up to at least 6.25 by the end of this week. And so if you got 6.25 with the yields at roughly 4.5, no, so maybe not 8, maybe 7.5%, maybe not quite 8, but maybe if we got a 5.5% 10-year, we'd have 7.5% fixed mortgages, which would be a huge move from where they were, a few months ago. If you look at the reaction in the U.S. in the currency market, the dollar basically declined a little bit the day that the announcement came in, then had a substantial drop the following day, and gold actually managed an $8 rise the following day. It was kind of flat the first day of the Bernanke announcement, and then it rose by about $8. So we've seen weakness in bonds and the dollar and strength in gold and some strength in the stock market. I think that the real reaction is what we're seeing in the bond market. I think that the Bernanke appointment is very negative for the bond market, for the dollar, and the stock market. I think ultimately the stock market will follow the bonds of the dollar lower. I think it's very bullish for gold. And I don't think that Bernanke was a good choice to replace Greenspan. And I think that Bernanke, he was a person who I most thought Bush was likely to nominate, pretty much because I expected him to do the wrong thing. But also what's unique about my perspective is I think Greenspan has done a rotten job in the first place. You know, everybody is saying, well, how do we find somebody that can replace Greenspan? Well, you mean how do we find somebody that can do as lousy a job as Alan Greenspan, who I think is the most incompetent Fed chairman we've ever had? I mean, if you're trying to find one who could be even more incompetent than Greenspan, then maybe Bush succeeded with Bernanke. We'll have to see, but certainly some of the statements that he's made and some of the speeches that he's given over the years lead me to believe that if the idea was to find a bigger fool than Greenspan, maybe it is Bernanke. And it's amazing too, because the guy is supposedly a very brilliant man. I mean, he got almost a perfect score. He got 1590 on his SATs, which is several hundred points higher than I got. He's gone to some of our finest universities, obviously a very, very bright man. But I guess, he checks his intelligence when it comes to monetary policy. You know, and maybe having these really smart Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, is also a very, very smart guy. You know, maybe it's a negative. I mean, these guys, it goes to their head. They're so smart, they think they can manage a fiat money system. They think that they can keep all these bubbles blowing up. They can keep all these balls in the air by the sheer force of their brain power. You know, that they think that they can accomplish things that where mere mortal men have failed. You know, I mean, with Alan Greenspan, you hear him talk about how he thinks that there's no need for a gold standard anymore because we now have central bankers, mainly him, that are so much smarter than central bankers of the past. You know, when Alan Greenspan used to write so eloquently about gold and its role in the monetary system, he was writing when he was talking about other central bankers who he knew were not competent and could not be trusted. But now suddenly, since he's got the position, he's so much smarter than them that now all of a sudden we don't need gold. Maybe Bernanke will have the same type of ego. I don't know. But in any event, we've got a couple of callers on hold already, so let me take these two calls. Larry from Nebraska?
Yes.
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I saw you this morning on CNBC, very impressed, and I think if you can share with everybody, there was a statement, then you made reference, if I've got it right, that the United States, as far as what we're paying in debt to foreign nations, exceeds in our income coming from investments and other forms of income from foreign sources. So, in essence, if I'm catching it right, what you're really saying is, from here on, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
You know, what's amazing to me, because I had assumed that we had already reached that point some time ago, but I was wrong. Because we're the world's biggest net debtor nation. We owe the world net almost $3 trillion. But despite the fact that the world has $3 trillion more of our assets than we have of theirs, we were still earning a higher rate of return on our smaller quantity of foreign assets. And that's because the assets that Americans hold were higher-yielding assets. We owned income-producing property where we collected rents. We had common stock that paid higher dividends. We had corporate bonds. And we owned individual businesses outside, which, you know, had profits flowing. And what foreigners own mostly in the United States is government debt, treasury bills, the Fannie Mae's, Freddie Mac's, this kind of stuff. And all short term. These guys are holding 90-day paper. And so the reason that we've been getting away with such a low net outflow of interest is because rates have been so low.
Right.
But now the rates are moving higher and higher and higher. Every time these short-term instruments roll over, that's more and more interest payments that we've got to make. And all that money is flowing outside the United States.
So what you're saying, if I'm catching right, based upon your comment today as well as your previous comments on some of the shows, is that interest rates are going to increase, so this snowballs upon itself.
Right, because the higher the interest rates go, the bigger our balance of payments gets, or worse it gets, because now we're sending more dollars to Asia and Europe to pay interest, and now they don't want those dollars, so they sell them. That pushes the dollar down, you know, and it's a self-perpetuating spiral. And as the dollar weakens, you know, and inflation picks up, interest rates go even higher, and we're caught in this mess. You know, these guys on CNBC are kind of clueless to that. I mean, one person said, well, what difference does it make if we have to pay interest to foreigners versus interest to Americans? And, you know, back in the 1970s when I was in school and we talked about the national debt, the reason that we were told we didn't have to worry about it was because we owed it to ourselves.
Right.
I thought that was nonsense at the time, but you at least can't make that argument anymore. We don't owe it to ourselves. We owe it to the rest of the world, and that's a big, big problem.
Well, I think you also would argue then right off the bat is that anybody who's a net debtor, in essence, as you take on more and more debt based upon the CNBC argument, is you're becoming more wealthy. Well, you're not.
No, I mean, debt only increases your wealth to the extent that it's used productively. So that if you borrow money, let's say at 6 or 7%, you invest it in a factory or something that can earn a return greater than that so that you can use the returns to pay off the interest and retire the principal. But if you simply accumulate debt to consume or buy assets such as residential real estate that throw off no rents or no income, you're going into bankruptcy.
Right.
And you know these guys keep pointing out, oh, but we've got all these assets. Well, so what? If we don't have a return on them, we've got to service the debt. And the minute we can't make the payments anymore, the assets are no good because we're going to have to sell them for pennies on the dollar.
Right. Or else the other thing too is then foreigners having claim upon those assets.
Oh, sure, of course, although I don't know why foreigners would want, you know, I mean, I can see why they might want beachfront property in Miami or something, but, you know, most houses in the United States, foreigners couldn't care less to own them.
Right.
You know, they don't want to be in the Midwest or, you know, they don't want a lot of these tract homes or McMansions or all these condos that people are buying. How often are they going to travel to the United States and need a place to stay?
Well, I did another quick aside. I just read an article off the Von Mises Institute written by Frank Shostak, I think is his last name, out of Australia, and he was making an argument based upon the Austrian School of Economics that then whenever credit or debt is dumped into the system, as you're putting a claim really where there's no pool of funding to support that, and so in essence what it's constantly doing is that it's destroying wealth through its process, and in essence we've had decades where all we've been issuing is debt upon debt upon debt.
Yeah, and you know the people like, you know, on the show you had Stephen Leishman, and you had talking about how, well, you know, people have been pointing out the problems with the current account deficit for years and yet everything is great. Well, everything isn't great. You know, when Greenspan came to office in 1987, we were still a creditor nation. Now we're the world's biggest debtor nation. And, you know, things have not gone well. I mean, sure, you know, if you inherit money and then you squander the inheritance, sure, you know, you have a good time while you're squandering it. It's fun to spend money. But eventually, when the money's gone and the bills keep coming in, I mean, you're in trouble. And that's the situation where we are today. I mean, sure, you know, things have appeared pretty good for the last 10 or 15 years as we've been squandering all of our national wealth, but now it's all gone.
Right. And I think you also made reference today on CNBC that, in essence, if I've got this right, too, under the Greenspan time period, we've doubled the money supply, and they were asking, well, what's...
Now, get that. Yeah, that was amazing, because I said we've tripled the money supply.
Tripled, okay.
Greenspan, and the reaction of the host was like, well, what do you expect? It's been 18 years.
Well, yeah, but the thing about it is that then everybody's value of what they hold, if they're savers or producers, is being degraded.
If you triple the money supply, you debase your currency by 70%. I mean, 70% in 18 years. I mean, that is terrible. I mean, you know, this guy acted like, oh, what do you expect? Shouldn't it triple?
Yeah, I know. I hear you exactly.
Well, are you a client, Larry?
I have gotten... applications, been talking to Jason Farkas, and we're getting things underway right now.
All right, great, great. Well, welcome aboard, and move quickly before the dollar goes any lower. I thank you for
And the other thing I'm also finding out, it takes many times 2 to 3 to 4 weeks to get everything processed, so for other people who are considering, you have to count the cost for how much time it's going to take to get everything done.
Well, generally, you know, we can set up accounts. I set up accounts, and people are trading the same day. I don't even require that they have money in the account. People can call my office up, get on the phone, get an account number, and place orders that day, you know, even without any money in their account, without a signature on a document.
I'm looking then to close out some existing IRAs and transfer everything over. That.
With IRAs and things like that, that slows it up. But for just regular retail accounts, somebody could be listening to this radio show right now, pick up the phone, probably call one of my West Coast offices, and be buying stock tonight in New Zealand or Australia or Hong Kong. It's a really simple process.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call, Larry. Keep listening and tell your friends.
I will.
Bye-bye. We also have another Larry on the line, I believe, from Louisiana. Are you on, Larry?
Yeah, the nomination, the president does the nominating. Who does the voting on the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board there?
The Senate confirms them. The president nominates them, and then it's up to the Senate to confirm him.
It's just a confirmation? Oh, so that's how they vote for him. Does he draw a federal paycheck?
Yeah, sure. That's how he's paid. I mean, although I don't know, you know, he could be paid. I mean, the Federal Reserve technically is a private corporation, although for all intent and purpose it acts as if it were a government agency. But he's probably paid from the Federal Reserve itself, because the Federal Reserve itself earns money and has a profit, although it's required to pay a tax equal to 100% of its profits beyond a certain return on assets. So it could very well be that he's simply paid out of the budget of the Federal Reserve, which is separate from the federal government.
Well, they said that he was the second most powerful man in the world. Who were we supposed to know that was the first, then?
Well, I assume the first is the President of the United States, George Bush.
Oh, so he...
This. Within a few years, neither Bush nor Bernanke are going to be even in the top 10 most powerful men in the world. They might not even be in the top 20 or the top 30, because that's how greatly the U.S.'s status is about to be diminished.
You think they're more powerful than the British royal family?
Well, the British royal family has no power at all. They're just figureheads. They don't have any power anymore. I mean, they have wealth, and they have the power of wealth, and they have reputations and everything, but they don't actually do anything. None of the monarchs in Europe actually have a role in governing the population.
So you don't think that when George Bush and Tony Blair walked in to see the Queen, they bowed down to her?
Well, no. I mean, I'm sure that they did out of respect and out of, you know, for the throne and out of etiquette. But I mean, she can't. I mean, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't pass any laws. She can't. You know, she doesn't. She can't levy a tax. It's not like the olden days where she could just, you know, say off with your head. You know.
Oh, okay. So she's not a part of that private corporation called the Federal Reserve.
Well, obviously the royalty isn't. I mean, the Federal Reserve again. It's a private corporation, but in all practical purposes, not. I mean, it's not your shareholders. No one's getting any dividends. And, you know, sure, when you get a letter from the Federal Reserve, they actually put a stamp on it. It's not franked like when you were getting a letter from Congress. But these guys are basically acting like an agency of the government. They bow down. I mean, Alan Greenspan has kissed the butt of every president who's been in the Oval Office since he's been there. And he basically does what these guys want. He's a lackey. And, you know, every 6 months he goes and he testifies before Congress and before the Senate, and he basically kisses some more butt. You know, so the idea that the Fed is an independent institution, a private banking syndicate, that might have been what it was like originally, but no more. You know, I look at the Federal Reserve was initially established to provide for an elastic money supply, which meant a money supply that expanded when the economy expanded and contracted when the economy contracted. I mean, money supply never contracts anymore. I mean, what these guys do is they grow the money supply when the economy is expanding, and then when the economy starts to contract or falls into recession, they print money even faster. I mean, the Federal Reserve is nothing more than an engine for perpetual inflation, and that's not what it was supposed to be. In fact, if the people in 1913 had any idea that this was possible, they never would have started. The Fed never would have gotten the permission to come into existence. Anyway, I thank you for your call. I know we still have another caller on hold. I want to quickly take a break to play a commercial to let everybody know how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital, and then we'll pick up for your phone calls and the rest of the program.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
At least trying to speak the truth.
Okay, we're back, and we still have some open lines, so if you want to call the program, the number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597, and let's go back to the phones. I believe I have Ron on the line from Ohio. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes, sir. Was interested in your take on the possible GM bankruptcy. Two questions. How long do you suppose these folks are going to carry on? And number two, do you foresee perhaps a bailout similar to the Chrysler bailout during the 80s there?
Well, you know, number one, I have been talking about the potential for a General Motors bankruptcy and a Ford bankruptcy for the last several years. And that notion, you know, which was considered, you know, crazy when I first started talking about it and writing about it years ago, is now almost mainstream. There are now several reputable analysts that are talking about the bankruptcy of General Motors. And, you know, I think the only way it's going to avert bankruptcy is two ways. One would be through hyperinflation, which basically extinguished its liabilities, and which is a possibility, or a government bailout. But other than that, I think that General Motors is going to go bankrupt. It doesn't mean that General Motors is going to stop making automobiles, just like all these airlines that have gone bankrupt, you know, they're still flying. What it means is the shareholders are going to lose all their money, the people who bought stock. And a lot of the bondholders are probably not going to get paid 100 cents on the dollar. And certainly a lot of people who are expecting to retire on General Motors pensions are not going to get all the pension benefits that they believe that they are going to get. And, you know, the reason that I think these companies are going to go bankrupt is I think, you know, for the last, you know, several years, they have had record sales of their products, yet they did not have record profits. In fact, recently, General Motors has posted significant losses. So despite flooding the country with SUVs, they lost money in the process. And the people who bought these SUVs have financed them through GMAC financing over 5 and 6 years. And these cars now have trade-in values that are far less than what's owed on these loans. And I think what's going to happen is a lot of the people who borrowed money to buy these SUVs aren't going to want to keep paying $60 every time they fill up their tank with gas if they can even afford it, especially with it, their mortgage rates rising and their credit card payments rising. I think a lot of these cars are going to be defaulted on, and a lot of these loans are going to go bad. In addition, General Motors has a tremendous amount of debt, and as interest rates are rising, that debt is becoming increasingly more burdensome. At the same time, their pension plan is going to become increasingly more underfunded as the stock and bond markets begin to decline. And so General Motors is going to have to make tremendous contributions to its pensions, have to make substantial payments of interest, and is going to have to take enormous charges against earnings, if there are any, with respect to bad loans coming back to haunt them. So it's going to be a very, very tough trick for GM to avoid bankruptcy. And same situation for Ford.
Right. Don't doubt it. I just wondered how much of a time frame do you think they've got?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it would depend on how fast interest rates rise, how quickly the economy moves into recession. You know, I mean, all those things can happen very quickly. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a General Motors bankruptcy in 2006 or 2007. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. Now, certainly, I mean, if the government tries to bail them out. Now, again, you know, the government doesn't have any money to bail them out, so they'll have to borrow it from China or Japan. So the question is, will we be able to continue to go back to that well, you know, when this happens? Now, certainly, you know, a foreign company can come in and buy them and bail them out. I mean,
sure.
Ford or Toyota or somebody can come in and buy General Motors or somebody else can buy Ford. I mean, in which case, we won't have any automobile companies left at all.
Yeah, and that's...
Chrysler was bought by Daimler. So there only are two automobile companies left in the United States that are American.
Right, and then that's almost as scary as hyperinflation if you look at it even with this terrorist war effort that we've got, because... you've got foreigners regulating your largest, it's going to be harder than the devil to produce tanks and so forth. Well, thanks much. Have a great evening.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
You know, while we are on the subject of hyperinflation, we might as well transfer back to our old friend Ben Bernanke, or as he has come to be known in some circles, Helicopter Ben. And, you know, the problem that Ben Bernanke is going to have is going to be confidence. You know, what's given the dollar value all these years has been confidence in Greenspan. He's almost a deification of the man. And, you know, a lot of it is due to the fact that he's been there for so long and so far so good as far as most people are concerned. I mean, he's managed to keep all these balls in the air at the same time. He's managed to juggle the housing bubble, the stock market bubble, the bond bubble, the dollar, the current account deficits, the lack of savings, the budget deficits. I mean, we've had so many problems, and I guess the fact that it all hasn't come collapsing down is maybe been accredited to Alan Greenspan. And so he has built up this confidence in him, and when he leaves in January, I don't think that all of a sudden he's going to be able to hand that confidence off to Bernanke like he was given a baton in a relay race. I think Bernanke is going to have to start from square one and earn the confidence himself. And I think he's starting out based on some of these comments that he's made. He's starting off in a hole trying to engender some degree in confidence that he is going to preserve the integrity of the dollar. Because the statements he's made basically show that he is willing to sacrifice the dollar for other causes, such as to combat deflation, you know, to keep the economy growing. You know, he talked about, you know, in his speech where he talked about dropping dollars from helicopters, and he wasn't actually advocating that. He was comparing a particular policy to dropping dollars from helicopters, but the fact that he compared it that way in a positive way was an endorsement of that. But he talked about the invention of a new invention called the printing press, you know, where we can create unlimited amounts of dollars at no cost, and we will do it. You know, we will print money and make sure that prices don't drop. He talked about, you know, buying long-term bonds, buying stocks, buying real estate. He talked about the Federal Reserve going and buying automobiles, that they could just keep buying them up to keep the prices up. And so these type of comments are very dangerous when made by a governor of the Federal Reserve, let alone its chairman. And so I think as a lot of this rhetoric becomes more widely known and distributed throughout the world, more and more people are going to, you know, doubt Bernanke and be nervous with respect to their holdings of U.S. currency. So I think that Bernanke, if he's going to, you know, have any shot at having some credibility, is going to have a lot of work to do in that respect, and he might have to be a lot more tight on you know, raising interest rates more vigorously or do something than Greenspan, because I think he's starting out in a hole here. Anyway, we've got Steve Cullen from our neighbors to the north up in Toronto. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Peter. Just a comment. I did see on CNBC this morning. It was kind of a Rush segment. If you get a chance, if you can do it right with right in the studio with them, I think it might go over better.
Yeah, well, I've been in the studio before. In fact, if you go to my website, there's a really good CNBC one.
I saw that one, and they all fired at you, and you answered all right back at them.
I wanted to actually go in the studio, but they said it was kind of full or whatever. They said rather had me in that room. So, and it's easier for me to get to that room because that room is about 10 minutes from my office.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I think they want to... Afterwards, I don't know if you heard them afterwards, but they want to touch up on the tripling of the.
It was amazing that, you know, I mentioned the fact that money supply tripled under Greenspan, and the guy's like, well, sure, it's supposed to triple.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, and
you have three times as many dollars in circulation, or it's M3 actually that's tripled. I'm not really sure, but I think the actual money supply, of course, if you count credit as part of it, has gone up a lot more than triple. When you count all the mortgage back and the home equity loans and all this stuff that's going on, and that's just M3 that's tripled. I mean, the other aggregates or other ways of measuring money supply have probably gone up a lot more than that.
Yeah, and the other point I wanted to make, do you think these guys like Greenspan or now Bernanke that become Fed government or Fed governors, you know, they're kind of in their own little world up in the money center or on the Capitol Hill in that area, do you think they lose touch with what's really actually going on and with the ordinary people around them? Like, I mean, I've heard you say, which I agree with, is being in a taxi cab, you were talking about talking to the cab driver. And
sure, these guys,
Zine driver, and it doesn't sound like they're having as good as easy a time as what the Fed would make you believe, you know, or make you or say they would.
I don't know if they're out of touch. I mean, I think that they're, you know, they're disingenuous. I mean, I think that what they believe and what they know privately is not what they profess publicly. At least with Alan Greenspan, I don't know too much about Bernanke. But I'm very, very familiar with Greenspan, and I know what he really believes, and I believe that conflicts dramatically with what he says publicly. I believe that Greenspan knows that he's full of shit.
Yeah.
I just think he's a liar, and I also think that, you know, maybe he thinks, maybe his PR has gone to his head, and maybe he thinks that even though he knows paper money doesn't work, and even though he knows the problems, he thinks he's smart enough to overcome them, and he's the one man that's figured it out, you know.
Yeah, like Bernanke wrote a thing about how the gold standard, or if I got this right, was what created the Depression. But I guess if they weren't on the gold standard back then, I guess we'd be looking at $12 trillion debt now.
No. I mean, the gold standard, I mean, well, that's the exact opposite of Alan Greenspan, because Alan Greenspan knows the cause, and, you know, what caused it, you know, obviously the problems in the Depression, the problem was the boom of the 1920s, which was caused by cheap money. It was caused by the Federal Reserve inflating the money supply and paying attention to consumer prices and not money supply. And they grew the money supply, and then when they eventually did the right thing and turned off the spigots, the asset prices came down. And then the Depression itself was caused by accumulation of foolish policies from Hoover, I mean, and then by Roosevelt.
Yeah.
None of which had anything to do with the gold standard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it.
We had several panics and stock market declines prior to the Great Depression where we had a gold standard and there was no depression.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess the point I was making was, okay, the stock market crashes and they go into, but yeah, that's right. No, if there wasn't a gold standard, they do what they've just done. just print money and try to keep
now,
it going.
Now, if Ben Bernanke, if these guys try to fight off this coming economic downturn by just printing money, saying, hey, we don't have a gold standard to create any discipline, then we will have hyperinflation.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting. Like one thing about Greenspan, when he talked, he could reassure a lot of people, and like he wasn't shaking when he talked. But who knows what this guy's going to do, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's all a big confidence game, and
I think it's just another.
I think we're in a very, very precarious situation. So I think he's not like walking into a situation where all is well, you know.
No, I think a lot of the more qualified people probably don't want it.
Well, if anybody knew anything, I mean, I guess if someone offered me the job, I'd take it. But a lot of people might not.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I would do if I was in there. I mean, I'd probably only have 4 years too, because they'd never reappoint me.
Right. But they.
In fact, they might kick me out. Like right the minute I open my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, true enough. But the we'll see we'll just sit back and see how it all unfolds.
Well, yeah, but make sure you know you're up in Canada, so at least you're in the Canadian dollar.
Yeah.
You can watch from the safety of
one thing on your show when I was listening, I was people phoning in about gold, like just your kind of ordinary people, and I was almost in shock up here.
Because this is my show. I mean, most people aren't thinking about gold, but I mean, the audience for this show is going to be very unique and very small, and so if you hear people calling in saying, yeah, I'm interested in gold, don't take that to mean that there's, a widespread interest in the part of the general public.
No, it wasn't that, Peter. It was the way they were talking. It was like, should I have my gold here in case I have to get out of the country? They were talking almost in fear.
Yeah, but again, and that's true. But again, this is a small minority of the population.
Right.
I don't know how many people actually listen to this broadcast, but I mean, I have no clue how many people are listening. But I mean, I can't imagine it's that many. I mean, it could be a few thousand, but I mean,
yeah.
I mean, at most. You know?
Yeah, well, you're working pretty hard there. I think you write a lot of articles, and I think you're getting noticed in a lot of circles here now. And if you want to know about Bernanke, just read the Magombo today. He'll tell you all about him. Okay?
All right.
I'll let you go.
Thank you.
Right, bye.
Okay, and again, the telephone lines are open, 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Yeah, you know, one of the things that Ben Bernanke said when he was nominated, I mean, there was this thing on television and Bush nominated him, one of the things that he said was that he was going to do whatever he could to continue the American prosperity as Fed governor. Now, the problem is, if he was really going to do his job, he wouldn't want to continue it. He'd want to end it. See, the problem is, we need a Fed chairman who could clean up Greenspan's mess, not make a bigger mess. And the current prosperity is artificial, and it needs to be brought to an end. We don't need a Fed chairman to try to find ways to let it to continue, because the more it continues, the worse the problems get. It's like, we've been digging ourselves in a hole for all these years, and he's promising to give us a bigger shovel so we can keep on digging. The reality is we need to get out. We need to stop digging. He needs to take away our shovels. And, that's what a real, honest, good Federal Reserve chairman would do, right? Take away that punch bowl. I mean, Greenspan, not only did he not take away the punch bowl, he's been spiking it continuously. We need someone to yank that sucker off the table completely. He's promising to continue right along. Maybe the markets are happy about that, but, the reality is that is a very, very dangerous thing to do. But again, I mean, what did I expect? I didn't really expect George Bush to appoint somebody who was going to try to administer some badly needed tough medicine into the American economy. He's just going to try to find a way to inject us all with some more heroin so we can keep on living in this fantasy high and delaying the withdrawal symptoms to potentially another presidency. Anyway, we've got another caller on the line. Gordon is calling from Iowa. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, Rader. Yeah, I love your show.
Thanks. Are you listening on shortwave or the internet?
I'm on the shortwave. I don't know that internet tip-tap stuff with your fingers or whatever. But
the show is also on my website.
Yeah, I'm not on the
website. www.europac.net.
Yeah, I understand that. I've heard you from the beginning, from June of whenever. And we got the crop in 2 weeks ago this coming Friday, and it ain't worth it. A tanker's darn. And everybody's lacing this nice equipment to get everything done quick, and now they're sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
So you've been listening since I started a year ago?
Oh, yeah.
Were you just turning the dial around and you happen to listen to it? Or?
No, you're on one of my frequencies. I'm a big shortwave listener. People out in shortwave, they know me as Speed Bump, the truck driver. I handle Speed Bump.
All right, well, appreciate your call, and keep on listening to my show.
Well, keep track of the commodity prices, because these farmers got their bins full and whatever else went to the elevator in town, and it's not worth anything. You know, it's not worth what they put into it during the year. And then they got to look at replanting next year and fertilizer and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So things don't look up very much here for the next year or two.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I love your show.
Thanks. Yeah. Anyway, getting back to the subject of Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve, but what we need is not somebody to continue on with the Greenspan legacy. We need somebody to tear it apart. We need someone to clean up this mess. You know, all that Greenspan was successful in doing is keeping all the balls from collapsing. You know, he's been keeping all these balls in the air and keeping them from dropping down on his head. But the fact that he's been so successful in preventing this day of reckoning from arriving or postponing its arrival, his success is the country's failure. Because the fact that it has gone on for so long has allowed us to get, as a society, into such a deep mess. If the problems had come to fruition years and years ago, we would have had a much easier time of correcting them. You know, the fact is it's gone on so long that we've lost such a tremendous amount of our industrial base. So many of our industries have now been destroyed, which might have been salvaged had the problems come to fruition years ago. And think about all the debt that we've accumulated, all the adjustable rate mortgages and interest-only mortgages that have been taken out in the last few years that never would have been taken out had it not been for Greenspan's success in procrastinating the arrival of this day of reckoning. And what we don't need is another guy that can come in and fill his shoes. But again, I don't think he's going to be able to. I think that whatever the circumstances were that have existed that have allowed Greenspan to endure for the number of years that he has, I don't think that that's going to happen with Bernanke. Because I think that the minute he's tested, and every time we've had a changing of the guard at the Federal Reserve and a new chairman, there has been something, some major market event. When Greenspan came in, it was the 87 stock market crashed. But something always happens, you know, to test his resolve. And my thinking is that what's going to happen is going to be the resolve of Bernanke to abandon many of the comments he's made and really defend the value of the dollar and preserve its purchasing power by aggressively raising interest rates and maybe even contracting money supply, which is what's needed to be done because, you know, that's what's going to happen. And inflation, which, you know, has been swept under the rug all these years, and even Bernanke is one of these guys who's been out there saying that inflation is well contained. Inflation is well contained. You know, this is all nonsense. And, of course, Bernanke is, just like everybody else these days, is pointing to the core CPI as some kind of proof that that inflation is well contained, and this is all a bunch of nonsense. But I think as he gets into his position, and as the CPI numbers continue to come out higher and higher, it's going to be more and more difficult for him to ignore the real CPI and just hide behind the core. And eventually, of course, the core is going to start rising too. And he's going to have to really do something. The dollar is going to come under a lot of pressure. Interest rates are going to keep rising, and he's going to have to step up to the plate and take short-term rates up even higher, and actually start, contracting the money supply or shrinking the rate of growth or doing something to try to instill some sense of confidence that the dollar is not going to just completely evaporate in terms of purchasing power. And that's going to be in contradiction to the comments he's made about his willingness to sacrifice the dollar, to use the invention of the printing press to just keep on printing them. And the market wants to make sure that that's not what he's going to do. Because if you've got a central bank governor or the chairman who says, we're just going to print money, I mean, print, why would anybody want that money? I mean, why would you want to own a currency which could be printed into oblivion? The only reason you'd own it is because you believe the opposite. You believe that the central bank issuing it was going to be very stingy with its issuance, was going to, you know, take great care not to increase the supply and to decrease the supply if need be to maintain its value. And I think that's going to be a test for this Fed chairman. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the fact that, oh, you know, he's tough because he's talking about this inflation, indexing or, you know, having some type of inflation rate. You know, a lot of central banks around the world these days have these targets of inflation of, you know, 1% a year, 2% a year, 3% a year, and they're trying to maintain the inflation. But central banks should target inflation, but inflation is not rising prices. That's a big problem. When you just look at CPI or other measures of consumer prices and try to pretend that that's inflation and then create some kind of band or target, I think you're making a mistake. Because inflation is the expansion of the money supply. And, you know, during periods of time, you can expand the money supply rather rapidly, but not have a correspondent rise in consumer prices. And that is not a license to keep on inflating. Central banks shouldn't be lulled into this false sense of confidence that they can keep printing money just because some inflation gauge, some price gauge is not rising. That was the mistake that the Federal Reserve made in the 1920s. And that's a mistake that Alan Greenspan understood and wrote about. In fact, if you want to read Alan Greenspan's critique of the 1920s Federal Reserve, you can read it on my website. You go to, on the Europac.net website, you go to About Us, and you click on the menu, Where We Stand. And on the bottom of that Where We Stand, I have a link. And it says, click here to read Alan Greenspan's critique of the 1927 Fed. Click on there, and you can read his whole argument called Gold and Economic Freedom, which was written by Alan Greenspan and reproduced in Capitalism, Ayn Rand's book, in 1966. And it is a great, great article. It has been reproduced many times by many people. I've seen it on many websites. But if you haven't had a chance to read it, you should go to my website and read it. And if you haven't read the book, Capitalism, the Own Ideal, you should get the whole book. It's a great book, and there are other essays in there from other economists, as well as things written by Ayn Rand herself. But get that book, but read on my website, Gold and Economic Freedom, and you'll read this critique and the dangers inherent in targeting prices. And somebody who wrote, I think Murray Rothbard wrote quite a bit on that as well, I think in his book about the Great Depression, which is another great book that people should read if they haven't read it. Perhaps Ben Bernanke should pick up a copy of those books as well. But, you don't want to target prices. You want to target money supply and credit. And that's what the job of the Federal Reserve is. And as I said, its original function. They should allow the money supply to expand to meet the needs of a growing economy, but then contract the money supply as the economy contracts. And the idea should be for a relatively stable money supply over time. And the way living standards should rise, the way incomes should rise, should be through falling consumer prices. That's how society should get richer, not by having the money supply grow and prices rise, but having the money supply stay around the same, maybe rise with the population or slowly over time, but to have prices decline so that money gains in value, so that money goes further. That's the whole idea. And if you look at the history of the United States, you know, the first 140 years of monetary history between, let's say, 1780 and 1920, that's what prices did. They fell. They fell for 140 years, except for some inflationary periods like the Civil War. You know, prices were declining. It wasn't until we got on this fiat system or paper money. I mean, we've only been on a pure fiat system since 1971, but it wasn't until the Federal Reserve that we started to see a constant increase in the level of consumer prices. And this is because these guys have been forever expanding the money supply, something that was not possible under a gold standard. I mean, the money supply was able to expand, but at a very, very slow rate, because in order to expand the money supply, you had to mine more gold. And mining gold is a difficult and expensive proposition. And so you just can't, you know, as Bernanke said, you can't just crank up the printing presses and print up an unlimited quantity of gold. That's why gold is such a good, provides such a good function of being money, because it is very difficult to increase its quantity. And that's what you want. You want to maintain the purchasing power of money so that long-term investments and financial decisions can be made. You know, how could you make long-term investments? Like here, the guys on CNBC are saying, hey, it's no problem if you triple the money supply. Well, if you debase the currency by 70% in less than 20 years, I mean, if people are planning to invest for retirement and they're making investments for 20, 30, 40 years down the line, and you're going to tell them, well, you know, the money that you're saving is going to lose 90, 95% of its value. I mean, how can you make any plans? How do you know how much money you're going to need if they're going to create new quantities of money at such a rapid pace? You know, it's amazing. You tell the guy that they've tripled the money supply, and he thinks, so what? Anyway, you know, the whole point of this whole thing, I think, now is, again, and I've said this before, but I think we have an enhanced a sense of urgency with respect to our need to get our money out of the U.S. dollar, to get our money into foreign assets, now that Helicopter Ben is going to be in charge of the presses, and now that the world and America's creditors are going to have some more time to digest his comments. And, that is going to be, a very, very dangerous proposition. So make sure that before that happens, that you get your money into your accounts with us at Euro Pacific. If you have one, if you don't have one, you know, set one up. Pick up the phone. Give us a call, 800-727-7922. Go to my website. Get an account set up so that you can get your assets safely positioned out of U.S. dollars, because I really think that, you know, we are very close to a major, major event, and especially with a new Fed chairman at the helm, it seems like a perfect time for something of significant proportions to develop. So you've got to, you know, really make sure and get your financial investment houses in order. And that means minimizing your exposure to U.S. inflation, to a decline in the dollar, to rising U.S. interest rates, to a slowing economy, to all this. And we do that by developing conservative, or what we believe to be conservative, portfolios of income-producing stocks around the world, and also bonds and, you know, precious metals and commodities and raw materials. And all these types of investments. So, you know, make sure, if you haven't already done so, that you call us up to open up an account. If you have an account, add to it. Now, I'm also going to be traveling in the next couple days. I'm going to be going to this Freedom Financial Fest in Phoenix. The Financial Fest. I don't know if you haven't registered for that. If you live in the Phoenix area, you should make plans to attend. It's going to be on October 29th. I believe that's a Saturday, October 29th. It's probably an all-day deal. And we're going to have a booth there, and I am also going to be speaking. So if you're anywhere near the Phoenix area this Saturday, come down and come to my workshop, and you can meet some of the guys at the Phoenix office. That's the real newest office there. We got three brokers now working in Phoenix. I think a fourth is on the way, maybe even a fifth and a sixth. I'm talking to some people out there who are considering joining a firm, and we're considering bringing on some more people. So definitely come by and see us. The next public event that I'm scheduled to be at is going to be at the Money Show in Orlando, the World Money Show in February. And we just finished a couple weeks ago the Money Show in San Francisco, and I think that was the most successful one that I've done from the point of view of the numbers of people that I was able to talk to. I was able to speak to, I had three workshops there, and I think I had standing room only in all three, and I had some pretty significant rooms. I'm sure I had over 1,000 people at my three workshops, and we had a record number of people who signed up or gave us their names and phone numbers and requested that we be in contact with them. And also, I did the bull versus bear debate with Joe Battipaglia. They've already scheduled another bull versus bear debate at the World Money Show. And this time, instead of a room that might hold, 300 or 400 people, they've got a room that holds about 1,200. And this time, it's not going to just be me versus Battipaglia. I think the tentative schedule is going to be me and Marty Weiss as the two bears, and Joe Battipaglia and Louis Navalier will be the bull. So it'll be a bull versus bear debate, and it'll be two bulls and two bears. So it should be fun. And that's going to be in Orlando in February. In the meantime, we just recently started our client newsletter. The first newsletters went out to everyone in my database. We sent out over 8,000 newsletters. We're calling the newsletter The Global Investor, and it went out a week ago on Friday. Now, I noticed that of the 8,000 I sent out, only about 2,000 of them got open. So we're trying to figure out what happened to the other 6,000? I mean, if they're being cut out by people's spam filters or something. But if you didn't get your newsletter and we have your email address, that's why. And we might have to send out another mailing. And those of you who get it a second time, just bear with us. But we want to try to make sure that this newsletter is getting disseminated to the people on our mailing list. But anyway, it's called The Global Investor. And I'm hoping to come out with a new issue relatively on a monthly basis, but I mean not necessarily, and we're providing it free of charge. So we're providing it to our clients and our prospects alike. And so if you didn't get it, I mean hopefully you'll get it in the second mailing or take a look at maybe it's somehow it's in your junk mailbox or something. But also if you haven't done so, remember to go to my website and download my research report on the collapsing dollar, the powerful case for investing in foreign equities. And you can also get that on researchreport1.com. I think I've got a call holding. I forgot David from Florida. Go ahead. We've got about 1 minute.
Hey, Peter. I'm working for a